Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. Today, we are diving back into what is always one of my favorite subjects, investing. And I think the reason I love doing episodes on investing so much is because I always come away having learned something new about a particular asset class or why markets are behaving the way they are or a new investing strategy that might be worth employing. Safe to say it's always such practical stuff, especially for a novice like me. Anyway, given that today's guest has literally just co-authored a book about investing, I get the feeling that we're going to come away from this episode with a few insights as well. So I'm very pleased to say that joining us today on Friends with Money is financial educator, podcaster, and soon-to-be-published author, Natasha Etchman, aka Tash Invests. Tash, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. You nailed my name as well. How exciting.
A lot of practice there, Tash. A lot of practice. I just realized I might have done you a bit of a disservice as well there, because when do you actually become an author? Is it when the book is published and out there in the world for people to buy, or is it when you finish writing?
I don't really know. I don't feel like an author just yet. So maybe when it comes out. It comes out the 26th of June, so a few more weeks away. But yeah, I don't think I'll resonate with the title for a little while because it doesn't quite feel real yet.
So maybe when you get have the opportunity to go out there and get the copy in your hands, that'll feel a bit more real.
Which is exciting. But yeah, it still just feels a bit fake anyway because I've got lots of other books. I'm like, oh, it's just another one of someone else's book.
Oh, I can totally understand. Well, actually, I can't because I've never written a book, but there we go. Well, we'll get into the book in a moment. And later on, I really want to tap into your own experience with investing and perhaps some takeaways from that. But to start off, Tash, it would be great to get a bit of background on your journey so far. So how long have you been investing and what inspired you to start off in the first place?
I started investing when I was 18 and I'm 26 now, so 8-9 years ago, which is pretty crazy. I was always the kid who was very curious and asked a lot of questions. And luckily, my parents were very open and spoke about money like it was a tool and something they just used. I remember my dad was talking to his friends about shares when I was like 10 years old, and he tried to explain to me what shares were using a tomato sauce bottle. And at the time, it made no sense because he was trying to say that the tomato sauce bottle is too expensive, so you just want to buy 1/10 of it and your friends want to buy the other 9/10 of it. And at the time, I was like, that's the dumbest thing ever. Like, that makes no sense. But it stuck with me for a while. And then later on, I just kind of, from hearing my parents talk and hearing them just discuss investments, they bought property, they always discussed pay rises. I kind of knew investing was something I had to do, and that's how rich people got rich, and I wanted to be rich back then. So yeah, it was just kind of a mix of them just speaking about it and then lots of Googling and YouTube videos and going on the internet. And then one day I was like, Dad, I'm ready. I want to buy something. And he was like, okay, buy this ETF. And it kind of just went from there.
And so it was a recommendation from your dad that ended up being your first purchase, was it?
Yeah, he buys lots of like random things, but he suggested I buy IVV, which is the S&P 500 ETF. So it's actually a really good recommendation back then, which I'm grateful for.
I can imagine it's done pretty well over those 8 or 9 years since. So happy days. I guess the big following question then, Tash, is what made you want to write a book about investing then?
I started talking about money online back in, God, it was like almost 4 years ago now in 2020. I didn't know that other people weren't talking about it like I was. Like, I would get home from school or from uni later on and just like openly talk to my parents about what they were doing with money, what their plans were, what their mortgage interest rates were, why we weren't going on holiday somewhere. I remember I wanted Foxtel and they were like, no, you can't have Foxtel because then we can't go on holiday later on, just like that kind of stuff. And then when I finished school and went to uni, I was like, wow, most other people aren't talking about money like this. So I became the friend that everyone came to for like questions about saving or questions about investing. So during lockdown, I was like, oh, I'll just start posting online one day, and I did. And then it kind of got a following pretty quickly because other people are obviously quite interested in money, but don't have anywhere to go for that information. Especially back then, there wasn't too many Australian-based people. It was lots of people from the US. Mm. So I started doing that and that took off. But it's really hard to teach people how to invest in a 30-second Instagram post. Like, you can only give really short snippets and you have to make them quite exciting or then Instagram won't show them to anyone. So a book's a good way to kind of teach people how to invest in the right order. And I found with a lot of books, they are very all or nothing. Like they could just kind of talk about investing, but don't talk about actually integrating it into your life. And I love traveling and I love exploring and I don't just want to work for the sake of working. So our book is kind of a good way to teach you how to invest, but also balance it with doing the things you love as well.
I suppose we should put a name on that book as well, right?
Yes. It's called How to Not Work Forever.
And I must say that I had the opportunity to have a quick read through over the weekend. And it's definitely something I'm going to try to push on my girlfriend who I've been trying to kind of get into things. So I think it'd be a really kind of a good read for her at some point as well. I guess moving on a little bit then, Tash, let's get into some specifics and give everyone, I guess, a bit of a flavor of the kinds of topics you delve into in the book. So first up, I think it's fair to say that a lot of people may like the idea of investing, but finding the spare cash to do so can be quite difficult. And you can obviously apply that to people who are just starting out, but it may also resonate with existing investors who want to increase the amount of money that they're able to regularly invest. So how did you do it yourself? And what are some of the other approaches that you've seen work for people in that respect?
Yeah, so either you can decrease your expenses or increase your income, or you can do a mixture of both. Initially, I was trying to be really, really, really frugal and I would not spend any money that I didn't have to. I would count every single dollar, but there's only so much you can really save. And once you've cut back everything, there's a point where you can't cut back anymore. So then you have to look at increasing your income instead. So back when I was 21, 22, I tried to work multiple jobs. I tried to pick up every overtime shift that I could. I was doing working on public holidays to get penalty rates, just anything to make an extra bit of money. And then from there, investing it, which obviously then grows your money even further and gives you a passive income. Other ways people have done it, I've seen people do side hustles, like lots of people love to. I've got a friend who loves cat sitting. So she makes like $30 a day visiting cats and she loves cats. That's great for her.
Wow.
Negotiating a pay rise is probably one of the most impactful ones that you can do. Like if you can negotiate a 10 grand pay rise for the work you're already doing, like that's a massive increase in your wealth. And if you're going to invest that, but yeah, it's really just like creating a budget, going through your cash flow, seeing what you can cut back on, but then on the other side, seeing how you can increase your income too.
Makes a lot of sense. I think when I first started out, I found the idea of I guess even finding a little bit of money to put towards investing difficult, but over time, kind of employing a couple of those things, it's kind of become a little bit easier. Moving on though, Tash, the whole investing in equities versus property debate is something that we could easily do a whole episode on, but I'm not going to make you do that now. What I do want to ask you is kind of a related question, and it's on your perspective on paying off a mortgage versus investing in shares, given that it's a decision that many people will consider at some point. So is this something that you've had to think about yourself? And I guess if so, how have you approached it?
I was very lucky. So I do have a mortgage. I bought an apartment 4 years ago now, but I fixed it for 5 years. So my interest rate is still fixed at 2.6% until next year. So that makes the decision, yeah, very easy for me. If we're looking at something like shares and you can hope that they would make between 7 to 10% each year on average over the long term, then paying off my 2.6% mortgage isn't really the best idea because I can probably make money in shares or even in a bank account at the moment, it's a better idea. If your interest rate is like 5 or 6%, or I've seen 7% recently, it might be smarter to pay that off instead. Because obviously with shares or interest in a bank account, you do have to pay tax on that income. Mm. But if you're just paying off your mortgage, like you don't have to pay tax on that money, you can just pay it off. So there's like lots of different things to consider there. But also for me, I don't want to put all of my money into one property and one asset. I want to have it spread over across a few different things, but it is a hard one at the moment with interest rates so high.
Definitely, unless, like you said, you're one of the lucky few that fixed at such a low rate and is still on that fixed rate. There'll be a lot of jealous people listening to that, I think. Making the decision to invest is one thing, but I think the frequency at which people invest on an ongoing basis is obviously another factor to consider. So Tash, are you more of a dollar cost averager or a lump sum investor? And why do you think it's important for people to think about how they want to approach this, how they approach the kind of the frequency of investing question?
Yeah, I like to say there's like an Excel answer and then there's actually the personal answer. So stats show that lump sum investing wins out over the long term rather than slowly waiting to dollar cost average your money into the market if you do have a lump sum. But obviously that can be really scary. So the Excel answer might say, put it all in and hope for the best. But your personal answer might be like, no, that's terrifying and I'm not going to do that. So dollar cost averaging can be a good idea. I dollar cost average mostly now because I'm not saving huge lump sums to invest. So the way that I do it is I have my broker take out $200 a week and then automatically invest it once it reaches $1,000. So I don't really notice those amounts as much. Like, it's not like I'm missing a huge $5,000 or $10,000. It's just like my rent coming out again, I guess, for investing instead.
That's really interesting. The automation piece is something that I always love, whether it's investing or you know, everyday banking and bank accounts, pieces like that. So you find that quite a helpful tool to be able to have to make sure that you keep that kind of, you know, regular investment going.
Yeah, definitely. If you think about like our rent, we know our rent comes out. We know that like I've automated all of my bills as well. So I know my electricity comes out. I know my water comes out. I know my rates come out for my property. And I also just know my investing comes out as well, no matter what. And your brain gets used to that. Definitely. It's like, okay, I know $200 disappears for every week for investing, which is great. But I found when I was just kind of picking here or there and I had to go and invest $2,000 at a time, I kind of put it off because it is a large amount of money to just let go of in one day. But now it's just automated and it's part of my life and I don't have to think about it.
It's interesting. So it goes back to that, you know, investment being part and parcel of your kind of wider financial life and wider life, as you kind of mentioned at the start of the episode.
It's like health and fitness. Like, if we go to the gym one time, like, it doesn't really do too much. You have to find a way to make it a consistent thing that you do all of the time. And you don't have to go and like run a marathon next week. You can just start by doing $5 a week in an auto, like in a micro investing app, and then move up to $10 a week and just see how that goes.
I thought you were about to say 5K run, which would be a bit hard for me, I think.
I don't run at all. Seeing everyone run recently, I'm like, oh my gosh, no.
Tash, this is very much anecdotal, but in my experience, the focus for, I guess, a lot of younger investors or relatively new investors isn't necessarily on superannuation. It's on building up a portfolio outside of that, an external portfolio. And there are obviously plenty of reasons why people may choose to focus on that. But how do you view super as an investment vehicle? And has your thinking towards that changed all over time?
Yes, super doesn't really excite me. And I'm trying to make it more exciting because obviously there's great tax benefits investing inside your super, but it still does feel like a really long way away for me. And even when you're looking at investing, 10 years feels like ages away, but I'm 26, super's like what, 34 years away for me? That's ages. So I'm trying to get more excited about it and seeing it as, yes, my investments outside of super will get me to 60 or 65, but then after that, super will be the rest of the 20, 25 years. The tax benefits are great, but it is still so far away.
And just out of interest, are there any kind of steps that you've taken actively to, I guess, you know, contribute more to your super or to make sure that you're on track with it?
Yeah, like I still put money into super anyway. I'm self-employed now, so I have to pay myself super. So that was definitely a mental hurdle where I was like, oh, I could just easily not do that and invest it outside of super anyway. But yeah, just looking a bit more longer term and realizing that 35 years actually isn't that far away in the grand scheme of like my life. And even just putting it into a compound interest calculator and seeing the difference that tax benefit ends up making, it's huge. Like, you're never going to get a 15% return anywhere that easily, but you can just get it by putting it in your super.
I think that's a really good way of looking at it and something that I've had to kind of force myself to do in recent years as well. Tash, I'll make this the last question for today, but it's probably the one that I've been most interested to ask. So thinking back over your investment journey so far, is there anything that you'd wish that you'd done differently, or are there any mistakes that you often see people making that you think are, I guess, worth sharing to shed a bit of light on and to help us learn from those?
Yeah, I think in hindsight, you can always say like, oh, I wish I'd bought like 10 grand worth of Bitcoin 10 years ago or something, whenever it started, but that's not really that helpful either. I think sometimes I go back and I'm like, oh, maybe I should have bought a house instead of an apartment, or maybe I should have done more of this or that. But I'm glad I did everything the way that I did because it's been a really good learning path. And I think if I hadn't done everything that I'd done, I wouldn't be where I am now. I think I've done really well and like I've set myself up, which is great. I think the biggest mistake I see other people making is just not starting at all. I think we can get so overwhelmed with all of the choices, all of the brokers, all of the ETFs, not knowing where to save or to invest or to buy a house. So some people just don't do anything. And I think that's the biggest mistake, because you will make mistakes as you go, but it's good to actually make them and learn.
And I've totally forgotten the phrase off the top of my head, but you mentioned this in the book. This is the kind of part of the anxiety that comes with having too much choice and being presented with too many choices, that kind of analysis paralysis. That's...
Yes, analysis paralysis, yeah. Or paralysis by analysis, some people say, yeah.
I definitely find that I'm a victim of that, especially when it comes to looking at vacuum cleaners, which is the very interesting thing that I've been doing recently.
What vacuum are you going to get? Do you have a recommendation?
Oh, I wish I did, but I'm still on the journey of deciding, and the paralysis is real in that respect, despite having a very out of order vacuum at the moment. Anyway, enough about my vacuums. Tash, I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat today. But before we let you go, when and where can people get a copy of your book?
It is called How to Not Work Forever. You can find it at any good bookstores to pre-order. It's on Amazon. It's on Booktopia. It's at Dimex as well. I've even seen it's at Walmart in the US, which is exciting.
Wow.
Yeah, random. Yeah.
That's not what I expected, but yes, I would just say that having, as I said, flipped through the book, it's definitely something that I thoroughly enjoyed from what I read, and it's something I'm going to try to voice upon people in my life. So we'll see how that goes. Beyond the book, Tash, where can people find you online if they're interested in learning more about your investment journey and, I guess, following along?
Yeah, I am Tash Invest on TikTok and Instagram, and I have a podcast called The Get Rich Slow Club, where we kind of teach you how to invest in the right order, we hope.
Sounds good. Check that out, listeners. Tash, thank you so much for joining us today on Friends with Money. It has been a real pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends with Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. So until then, I am Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.